Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to our latest episode of the Early Excellence podcast. This week we've picked out an episode to re-release that will really get you thinking about your practice and provision. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Rachel and Sue from Home Valley Primary School in Scunthorpe as we explore the many benefits of a well-planned learning environment. Sue and Rachel, hi, and nice to see you both.
Hi, Andy. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. It's great that you could give us some time. Now, you've been on quite a journey, haven't you, over the last few years at Home Valley, and we're going to be talking all about that journey as part of the podcast, and I'm sure lots of people are going to find it really, really interesting. Before we get started with all of that, would it be all right to have some introductions? Should we start with you first, Rachel? Would that be all right?
Yeah, that's fine. So I've been head teacher here at Home Valley for 11 years now, actually entering my 12th year as head. Prior to that, I was assistant head for a short period of time. I initially joined the school in 2011 as a class teacher, but I'd actually been a governor at the school prior to that role as well. So I've got a long history with the school and I'm very passionate about the school and the local community.
Brilliant. Yeah. That can't happen very often, I wouldn't think, that somebody is a governor before they're a head teacher at
Absolutely.
The same school.
Yeah, it's because this was a school I picked for my own children when they first started here. So became a governor and then, yeah, it's all gone on from there.
Very interesting. Super. And Sue, over to you. Could you give us a bit of an introduction? Would that be okay?
Yes. So this is my 14th year of working at Home Valley. I started as an NQT back in 2010. And I worked in EYFS in year one for 4 years. And then I became the EYFS lead 9 years ago.
I see. Very good. And can you tell us a little bit about Home Valley, the school itself? Would that be all right?
Yeah, so Home Valley is a slightly larger than average primary school. We've got 420 children currently on our roll. So we're a two-form entry school. We take 60 children into our two reception classes each year. We don't currently have a school nursery. We'd very much like one, as we do take from 19 different providers, which gives all sorts of challenges to us. So we would like a school-based nursery, but that's a whole other story.
Yes.
So in terms of our school context, we do, like all other schools, have an increase in number of children who are disadvantaged, an increase in number of people who got identified SEND needs, and we've seen a significant increase in the number of pupils with education healthcare plans.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, everybody is finding that, aren't they, really? You know, wherever I go, whether I'm delivering training or whether I'm visiting schools as part of a consultancy visit or for other reasons, it's part of the conversation everywhere. And it is important to keep talking about it because I was delivering training yesterday and there was a lady there who was saying that actually it's really important that we talk about it because if you are the only reception class teacher in your school and therefore you are that first point of entry for your children, then actually it can be quite, first of all, it can be quite an isolating role, I think. You can feel quite isolated in that role. You're the only person doing that role within the school. But also alongside that, I think people sometimes feel that, you know, they must be doing something a bit wrong. You know, that actually they've not got it quite right. It must feel like you haven't got it quite right because it's, you know, the children's needs are so great. But actually it is very much that national conversation. It's not just what one person is doing in one school. It is the conversation that is happening absolutely everywhere. And so I do think we need to keep highlighting it, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much for introducing yourselves. Let's get started then. As I said just before, we're going to be talking all about that journey of development that you have been on, right the way through from a number of years ago, right the way through to your recent Ofsted inspection. So let's start at the beginning of the journey. Sue, tell us about the beginning of the journey from your perspective. Would that be all right?
I can. So we've always had a really high quality early years environment. We actually had it designed around 15 years ago before we started, Rachel, by Early Excellence. So it was already really well set out, really well organised. But when the new framework came in 2021, it was a good opportunity for us to really think about our curriculum and reflect on our classroom provision. And Rachel and I, we've both visited Early Excellence a few times, haven't we? And we always felt really inspired and really love your philosophy of how things are organised, how you design your classroom layouts. So we did invite you to come, Andy, to support us with redesigning our classrooms. And we spent a day with yourself and another consultant. And you worked with the whole team, really, for us all to reflect on the provision that we already had, what we wanted to improve, what changes we wanted to make. And we really had that time to talk through and reflect on what we wanted to achieve.
And it's given you a really good opportunity to really think about your intent of your provision.
Yes.
So why things are set up as they are, why the resources that you've chosen to put in there are there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes, and I remember the day. You know, it was great that actually that you were very much at that point in your career, I think, as early as lead, where you had tried different things, you'd had different things in the past that had worked or not worked, and that you were very much open to that conversation about actually, well, where do we go from here? Let's look at that space, because you've got a big space available to you, basically two classroom spaces available to you. And very much open to that idea of let's have a look at this as a blank canvas. Let's have a think about how do we get the most out of it. So yes, no, it's really interesting that actually that's that beginning of that process is really reflecting on the practice, but also that very much the provision at the heart of that practice.
Absolutely, yeah. And prior to this process, we'd done a similar process outside, thinking about our outdoors area, which is a beautiful area, as that blank canvas. So it kind of linked that indoor-outdoor provision together as well and made it feel like one classroom space, one learning space.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So could you tell us about, obviously we're talking about from that room planning process onwards, and that you had that that there was that impact from that room planning process. But I'm just interested to know, what was the difference? You know, so what came before it? Obviously what we looked at was continuous provision, well-planned provision, making sure that everything earned its place, and really thinking about the links between areas of provision within the room and all of those sorts of things. But what came before it? What was, you know, was there a big shift? Was there a big difference in terms of practice?
It was around the children staying longer in provision. That's one of the things that you really wanted to happen and to be encouraged, didn't it? You found that because we have got a big space, but it's an unusual, awkward space. It's a bit like an L-shaped, but then with a separate classroom. And you found that the children weren't staying in the provision for those extended periods because That's the right. space was quite open. So you had quite a bit of children flitting from one to another without sustaining that period, a long period of engagement in one setting. Yeah. There was a bit of running around the classroom.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
To engage that.
I think we filled the space more with corners, with units, with different areas, so they would stay longer and be more engaged in those areas. We've really noticed that, haven't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, brilliant. And I think also, I mean, one of the things that I remember you talking about previously was that I think prior to really looking at the continuous provision of what's kind of always available, that you had from time to time kind of changed things maybe a bit too often. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. I think we sort of felt that if we were doing a certain theme or a certain book, that we had to change the whole classroom to link with that book. So say we were doing the Gruff Flow, you'd feel that you had to change every area and incorporate that into the water, the sand, the construction. And I think, you know, we were making a lot of work for ourselves. So I think it was about us reflecting and thinking about that continuous provision and what's there all of the time and how we can enhance it rather than changing it all the time.
Yes. And I think the beauty of that is that it also means that when you're doing something once and you know it's going to be there for a long period of time, you put more of a focus on it because you know it's going to be there for longer. Whereas I think with practice where you are putting something out and it's only going to be there for maybe a few weeks, you kind of get to the point where you think, well, that's all right. That will get us over the line for the next few weeks. You know, that's okay. You know, we don't want to put too much into it because it's going to be packed away again in 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it might be. Whereas I think if you have provision that's always there, if you have an area set out in a particular way for the whole time, what you're doing there is you're really reviewing it and thinking about it and thinking about the quality of it and maximizing your time because you're not packing away and you're not getting lots of different things out. So it works in different ways, I think, really.
Definitely. Yeah. The home corner was another area that you used to change all the time, didn't you? Used to change it to different settings.
We did.
And often settings that weren't familiar or relevant to the children, and actually keeping it as a home corner, an area that's familiar to the children, an area that the children can have really high quality conversations in, has really helped with the development of that speech and language and communication.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really key area in both classrooms. We were really keen to have that high quality provision in the home corner.
Absolutely. And your home corners are brilliant. I came back, didn't I? I was trying to think now. It was probably a couple of years ago. I came back because we did a sort of a room planning event for teachers and practitioners to come along to from a wide range of settings from your local area. And it was great to kind of showcase your environment, but also it was wonderful to see how it had been developed since I'd been there for the room planning. Because, of course, the room planning puts that structure in place, and it's certainly, you know, we have sets of resources and things like that. But also you've taken it to another level beyond that, in that, you know, in your home corners particularly, you clearly had with your team spent such a lot of time really thinking about the detail of what needed to be there, what materials would make it feel as real as possible, what opportunities for the children to do their kind of everyday kind of household jobs that would be there. Yeah, the detail was absolutely wonderful. Really was. I wondered about, obviously I'm familiar with the space, but of course people listening to this won't be. And I wondered about whether we could manage sort of almost between us really, although it'd be mostly both of you people, Sue and Rachel, to kind of give people a bit of an idea of the space. It is two rooms, isn't it? But would it be possible to kind of verbally give somebody a bit of a tour around the area describing it?
Yeah, there are two rooms, but the two rooms are identical, because what we want is whatever class they're put in, we say to the families, you're getting the same offer in both classrooms. So the teachers work really closely together to make sure what's happening in one classroom is being mirrored in the other. Sue, you spend all day in your classroom, so you're probably there to do the talk.
Okay. So as you come in, I'll describe my classroom. So they are really bright and airy classrooms, first of all. We've got high ceilings. You know, it's got that really nice feel as soon as you walk in. And we do keep the displays quite minimal. They're really neutral. We really think about what we're putting up, so we're not over cluttering the environment. We're just keeping it as calm and neutral as possible. So as you come in, first of all, on the left-hand side, we've got the water area set up. We've thought carefully about what provision we're going to put in there. You know, keeping the water area linked to learning about water, which has been a change for us, because I think previously we might have been inclined to put numbers in there or put phonics letters in there, but it's all about learning about water. We've got a selection of different sized containers and tubes with the children learning about floating, sinking, filling, pouring, splashing. So it's all about them developing that vocab in that area. As you go through, we've got a writing area straight in front of you with all different writing resources set up. So we've got different selections of paper, envelopes, squared paper, lined paper. So that's always there. So the children know wherever they are in the provision, if they want to make a card, if they want to do something, they can come over, choose the resources they need, and you know, take it wherever they want to. We've got a dough area That's one of our favourite areas in the classroom. So we've got a round table set up where the children can sit together and interact with each other. And again, we've got the open shelving with different resources linked to making dough. So we've got it's all linked to baking, mixing, things that they're familiar with. And lots, you know, I do a lot of charity shopping as well. So looking for those real resources that we can put in there. So yeah, we do make our own dough every day. So that's a really good,
The children are involved in that.
See, that's brilliant, isn't it? What a great experience.
Yes. Yeah, lots of learning there. And then we've got a huge creative area, as you know, Andy, at the back of each classroom with a big table in the middle. So the children can again choose the resources that they need. We've got open shelving again with card, paper, string, glue, scissors. So they can go, think if they've thought of something they want to make, they know where they can access everything. They've got independent access to paint as well. Again, lots of mark making in that area. We've got a big easel at the end as well. And again, we encourage the children to be really independent. So we have different size paper, different textures of paper, so they can choose what they want to do. And we try and keep it as open-ended as possible in that area so they can really be creative. And then we've got our home corner, which we've already talked about a lot about the home corner, but that's a really good area in both classrooms. So really familiar resources that the children can use.
And again, you try and use real life resources in there. So real pots, absolutely, cups and saucers, real knives and forks in there as well.
Definitely. And lots of links to real writing in there as well. So they can write birthday cards, make lists. We've got recipe books in there.
It is really, really well thought through.
Really keeping it simple and keeping it true to their lives that they're familiar and they're confident with.
Yeah. One of the things we've got in there is a small laptop. So it doesn't work, so the children can pretend to send emails. And actually, when we had our Ofsted inspector come into the setting, he said to one of the children, "Oh, what are you doing and what are you learning about today?" And she was rocking a baby. And she said, "Well, my baby's got some symptoms, so she's not very well." So the inspector said, "What are you going to do? Are you going to ring the doctor?" And she said, No, I'm going to send him an email because that'll be an easier way to let him know my baby's poorly." Whipped out the laptop and pretended to send an email to the doctor. Yeah, you know, amazing. Yeah. That's how the children,
that's
the world,
fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah,
what comes across though is that whilst we started off talking about the room planning process, that actually beyond that process, each area is then very well planned for as well. So the whole structure of the space, as we've described, is well planned for in terms of the corners and the bays and the way that it's organized. But also at a smaller level, and you go into each area, the sets of resources have all earned their place there on the shelf. They've all been planned for. They haven't just appeared there. They aren't just there because that's what you've got. You know exactly why each of those resources are there within that area, and your team do as well. And you understand the learning possibilities behind each of those materials and resources. And I think, certainly when I work with teams around this, I think as people do it, they grow in confidence as a team. It helps us to be able to then, you know, picture being able to take somebody, as you've just done, take somebody on a tour around the learning environment, describing what's there within that space, why it's there, and the learning possibilities of it. Actually, I think that really helps people to grow in confidence in terms of both their practice and their provision as well.
I think that involvement of the team is really important, and that was a really important part of our process, because we do have a large team. There's two teachers, three teaching assistants, but they were all involved in the process. So they really had ownership. They understood why it was being set up like it was. They understand the purpose behind all of the resources. And like you've said, everybody being able to buy in and understand those learning opportunities, that's had a really significant impact on our children and their learning.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've got that impact on the staff in terms of staff knowledge, staff confidence, being able to talk about the practice and the provision and so on, and the learning possibilities that are there, and that all of that planning for that. What about the children then? In terms of the children, you mentioned a little bit earlier on about engagement. So you mentioned a little bit earlier on about that kind of the the motivation in terms of the room planning process was that actually you'd noticed children maybe not being quite as engaged as they could be, or that they were flitting around a little bit from area to area. What did you see in terms of, you know, following on from developing the learning environment, both in terms of the room plan and in terms of planning the materials and the resources within it? What did you notice in terms of the impact on the children?
So straight away, as soon as we'd put the new provision in, we did notice that the children were more engaged and they would stay in areas for longer. So overall, the classroom felt much calmer because the children weren't all over the place. They weren't spending that sustained time in each area. And I think what we noticed, particularly in autumn term, is the children settled really quickly in school. We take children from 19 different providers. But because we've really thought about that provision, about putting things out that the children are familiar with, and a provision that means something to them, we do find that they settle really, really well in the autumn term. Again, just going back to not changing it all the time, I think that's something that helps them feel really safe and secure as well, and confident to move their learning forward themselves. I think you, Andy, likened it to a supermarket when you go into a shop and everything's been changed and how you feel. So that's always stuck in my mind, really, when we're tempted to change everything. Actually, we don't need to. We need to be confident with how it's set out.
And I think that does make sense. You know, that when you think about progression of skills, you don't tend to get progression of skills when children have access to a completely wide range of different experiences that are kind of rotated. Whereas if you have the right resources that have lots of learning possibilities available for a longer period, you're much more likely to see a progression of skills, actually, because those resources are the right resources and they're available for a longer period of time. I do think sometimes we interrupt children's learning by kind of almost overdoing it in terms of swapping and changing and overthinking it in terms of what we could put out next week and what's going to be in the area the following week and so on. I think actually if the resources are the right resources, they should be available for longer periods, really. It's really interesting to talk this through with you. So tell us more about the impact on the children. So we've talked about engagement, talked about the children settling in. So in the autumn term, that you found that they were settling in. What about beyond that point?
Speech and language has got to be a huge, huge one for us. That obviously we get a lot of children starting who are below age related with speech, language and communication. So we've seen a huge impact with that, with them interacting with each other, interacting with the adults in the provision. So just, you know, that has been a huge success for us, hasn't it?
Again, it comes back to that familiar, doesn't it? It's things they're familiar with. It's things that have been repeated. And like you said, that progression of skills. They're overlearning in those areas, so they're able to really develop that high quality language and communication.
Yeah, and what we actually did as a team, once we had all the new provisions set out, we sat down as a team and thought about, right, what vocab do we actually want the children to learn in each area? What are we going to focus on when we are interacting with the children? And, you know, so we can really be specific what we want them to learn.
Yes, absolutely. And it is that depth of thinking again, isn't it? You know, that's not surface level. That's not just sort of hoping that it happens. That's really well planned for provision, really thinking through in terms of the materials and the resources that are there, but also thinking about, you're going into now, of course, the role of the adult, and you're starting to then think about, well, what sorts of words will we use within that area? Are we all using the same word? Are we being consistent? So are staff across those areas using the same words for the same resources? Because that's not always the case. And then alongside that, of course, knowing what sorts of learning possibilities, but also language and vocabulary, can be used within each of those spaces in meaningful context, which of course is always the important thing, isn't it? We learn language through experiences. We learn language particularly through sensory experiences and through real life experiences, through hands-on experiences. And so that process of thinking through the words and the language that go with the experience that you've planned in each of those spaces as a team, I think, is crucial. Yeah, absolutely important. Let's move on then to your Ofsted inspection. You've done such a lot of work, of course. So from the room planning process 3 years ago up until fairly recently, you put all of that work in. And then, of course, you had your Ofsted inspection. Tell us about when that was, first of all. When was it?
So we were inspected in October 24, right at the end of October. And that was actually over 10 years since our last inspection. We were judged outstanding in 2013. So we'd been waiting an awful long time for that inspection. We hadn't done things for Ofsted. We'd continued to really focus on what's right for our school and what's right for our children. But there was that element of being prepared. So obviously we'd worked with yourselves, we've worked with external training people, we've worked with our local authority who've come in and done reviews and things just to help make sure that we're on the right track and actually the judgments that we're making about our setting are accurate, because we did self-assess our early years provision as outstanding. And thankfully, the Ofsted inspectors agreed with that. It was one of the first areas within school that they identified as being outstanding. And both our lead inspector and the second inspector that we had were both early years specialists. So they really had an in-depth knowledge, knew what they were looking for, and very quickly understood our intent, what we were trying to do with our children, and the ethos around our setting and how things were, you know, how things are set up, not just in the room, but our curriculum, the relationships, alongside the challenges. I know we keep talking about this, about the 19 different providers, but that is a really, really tough challenge. The inspector did actually comment that he couldn't believe the children had only been in school 7 weeks. Already they were showing signs of working together as a team, having the same routines and systems and expectations in place for all children, despite where they'd already been at the previous setting.
And of course, it's when you then get an inspection that you see, of course, that all of that work that you've put in and how you've supported staff, how they've developed their confidence and their knowledge and their skills as well, that and the consistency of those messages across the team, that you see why it's important to do all of that work. And as you said, Rachel, you don't do it for Ofsted, of course, you do it for the quality of the practice and the provision, of course you do. But alongside that, of course, when you then get an inspection, when you do have that inspection process, I think the process highlights whether the team are all on the same page or not. It also highlights, I think, the knowledge and skills and the amount of work that's gone into creating that environment and whether everybody is consistent in terms of those messages. Sue, then, I'm interested to know from your perspective as an early years lead, then tell us about the, because of course you did wonderfully well, okay? You of course got your outstanding judgment in terms of the early years, and of course it's gone incredibly well. But I know people listening along will be really interested to know about the process itself, you know? So for you in the classroom, during the days of the inspection, what was that like? What sorts of things were you asked? What sorts of things did you talk about as part of the inspection process?
So on the first day, obviously the inspector came into the classroom and spent a lot of time in the classroom, almost the whole morning, either one inspector or another. They came in to watch phonics, and then another inspector came in just to be in the provision and observe how the children were reacting, how they were using the provision. We just made them really welcome. And just when she came in, just said, please just go anywhere that you want to go, ask any questions. And go on.
Yeah, something that Sue did really well that we've actually trained our staff as well is to point things out to the inspectors that you want them to see, so you know what threads they're looking for. You know they're looking at how you've supported your children with SEND. You know they're looking at how you've supported with your disadvantaged. They want to know that they know what your barriers to learning are when the children first come in. So Sue and the team were very good at saying, this child has come in with an EHCP. Yeah. These are the child's targets. this, you can see the child working towards these targets in the area of this provision. This child is a disadvantaged child, coming significantly below. However, we've already seen progress in this area. Speech and language is one of our barriers to learning. These are the things you'll see in our provision that we've got in place to support these children. So really pointing those things out that you want them to see as well. So although they're having that bit of free watch, really guiding them to the things you want them to see as well.
Finding them after
and
saying, I need to tell you about this. I need to show you this. And, you know, that was all part of it as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. And being really proactive, which is not always something that comes naturally to us, particularly when we're under pressure within an inspection. And I think you're right, what you were saying before, Rachel, about actually, you know, you do have to practice that, which is why I think it is important to practice things like, you know, taking somebody on a tour of the environment, you know, taking the rest of your early years team around the environment, describing what learning possibilities happen within each of those spaces, why each of those resources are there in the way that you've just described earlier on, Sue. You know, that process, I think, helps us all to grow in competence. But you're right, on the day of an inspection or on the days of inspection, it is important, if you can, to not sort of shrink away, which is naturally how we sometimes feel like, you know, being, but actually to try to be proactive and to really sort of go at it in terms of pointing things out, describing the processes, describing where you've come from in terms of developing the space. All of that work that you've done, you're not doing it for Ofsted. But actually, the inspector isn't going to just know about it. I think you do have to be able to have some of those discussions and to bring things up, really, and to be proactive in it.
But you think they're only in your school for a very short period of time. You've got to make them say what you want them to say to help them support, to make that judgment. You had an interesting experience, didn't you? So Sue had one of the inspectors in the room and she had two young boys who were having a bit of a fallout, not physical. They were just having a bit of a debate. And Sue was thinking, please, inspector, I hope you haven't seen that. Sue carried on having a conversation with the inspector. And actually, when he came out and we had our keeping in touch meeting, he said it was really refreshing to see that Sue had actually let those boys step, she'd stepped back, let those boys actually have that opportunity to have that debate and resolve. They resolved that conflict independently. And he said, often you see teachers jump in, and actually Sue wouldn't normally have jumped in unless she needed to. But when you've got an inspector in the room, you're tempted to do something different. So I think it's really important as well to do what you would normally do. And actually that fared really well, because it showed that importance that we place on allowing the children to be independent and to use those communication skills for the purpose that we were able to communicate.
That's key as well, what you said, Rachel. You've just got to do what you normally do, because the children are used to those routines. They're used to the classroom. You've just got to show off what you normally do every day, day in, day out.
Yeah, and have the confidence in it.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And because the children are used to having visitors, they're used to having people in the setting as well, you know, because we'd had reviews already as part of our local authority team and we bring visitors into our school all the time, they were confident to go up and speak to the inspectors. Yes, one little girl showed the inspector her artwork, and the inspector said, oh, that's a lovely picture. And she said, no, this is not a picture. This is a masterpiece. And that was just a classic moment of, you know, showing that language, but actually that pride. No, you're calling this a picture. It's not. It is a masterpiece.
Love it. See, that's amazing. That is brilliant. So can you tell us as well, you will have had, of course, an interview with one of the inspectors too. I'm sure people listening to this will be interested to know kind of what sorts of things were asked and what you talked about, what you included within your answers. Would that be okay?
It would. So a big focus was on what our intent was for our curriculum, what we wanted the children to learn, sort of why this, why now. And I, you know, I talked a lot about wanting to make sure the children were independent, confident. By the end of the year, we want to make sure that they're ready for moving into year one. So we're teaching them all those skills. We talked about that balance of them learning independently in the provision, but also making sure that we were teaching them those key skills of reading, writing, maths, you know, the skills that they do need as they're moving up the school.
You talked about how your curriculum is really built to develop those skills, and actually there's no overlap in learning in reception and year one. So what the learning tasks you do in the reception aren't repeated in year one.
Yes.
There's that really carefully thought out progression.
Yes. So obviously we work really closely with subject leads in school to make sure that it does progress really seamlessly and from reception to year one to year two. I got asked about how we involve the parents in the children's learning. That was a key question. Obviously, we've got all those different providers, that 19 different providers that come to our school. So how we start that transition before they even start school. And we do loads, don't we, Rachel?
And we do.
Transition work, we're starting it in the next couple of weeks. We start visiting nurseries, inviting parents in, having open days. And then once the children are here, how we keep that strong connection with parents. So we use Seesaw to communicate with parents. We have regular meetings in school. We have events in school. We have an open door policy. So they're really interested in that as well. The safeguarding questions, obviously, we all get asked the safeguarding questions.
Mm-hmm. But all other subject leaders as well were asked about the early years curriculum and what the early years curriculum looks like in their subjects, how they monitor it and how they know that there's a high quality provision.
Yes. And I actually went in with the maths lead as well when he had his interview. He asked me to go in as well to talk about maths in early years.
So that's brilliant. And it again shows the work you've done over the last few years, doesn't it? Where actually you've clearly done work as the early years lead with the subject leads on what their subject looks like in the context of early years. So it's not just what happens in terms of the directed teaching, although of course that's important, but actually it's all of the things that you described earlier on that are really well planned for, you know, from the real working clock within the role play area, or the calendar on the wall, or, you know, the materials that are in the dough area that link to mathematics and shape. And all of that actually is crucial information, isn't it? And it shows that you have that joined up picture across the school, which I think, again, helps with confidence, doesn't it?
Does. And subject leaders do come in all the time, don't they, Rachel? If we're doing subject monitoring, it always includes early years. So we're used to subject leads coming in every few weeks, really, and so they know exactly what we're doing in early years.
Yes, brilliant. Well, I should say as well, congratulations. You know, it's a brilliant achievement. It really is, and to hear how well it has gone is fantastic. You know that that's not easy at all. It doesn't just happen, of course. You've put in so much work as a team, as a school team, on this, and have really developed the practice and really supported your adults to move forward with it as well. It's wonderful to hear. And I understand as well that, you know, you were saying earlier on, Rachel, that you are hoping, fingers crossed, hoping to be able to have nursery provision on size.
Yeah, so the local authority have identified a significant need for nursery places in our local area, particularly following the increased hours that parents are able to access now. Unfortunately, because our school is so full, we don't have any spare places to be able to renovate or create into a nursery space. So we do need a complete new build. So I'd like something really innovative and different, ideally something that opens all year round. So it supports working families in school holidays as well. But really, the key thing is to be able to support those children with their learning from an earlier stage, to make sure we're getting them reception ready, and to make sure that they're coming in ready to be able to learn in reception, you know, starting that provision earlier. Original talk was around a naught to, you know, provision starting at naught. I'm not quite sure how I feel about the babies. Can you get babies doing phonics? I'm sure we could, we could do that in some way. Watch this space, Andy. Watch this space. I'm determined to make this happen for our community.
That determination definitely comes across from you, Rachel, and across from the team as well. We wish you all the very best with that. And it definitely is a kind of watch this space kind of thing, isn't it? That you can see the impact that you have on your children and families in terms of reception. You know, think about what that can look like if you actually start from three and you really build up that process from there, I think, you'd have such an impact on your families and community as a whole, I think. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me. I really enjoyed chatting with you. It's really interesting to hear about this journey of development, and I'm sure people listening in will have found it useful too. Thank you so much for joining us. All the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. And thank you for all your support as well. You've been an instrumental part of our journey as well. So thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you. So there you go. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you found the episode useful. Now you can stay in touch with all things Early Excellence by joining our mailing list and also, of course, following us on all of the social media platforms as well. Okay, have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.